I'm joined on the line by Arthur Jones, filmmaker extraordinaire, who is currently somewhere in Guangzhou, I believe. Arthur, how are you today?
I'm good. Actually, I'm in Beijing.
You're in Beijing. You get around a bit.
I just arrived. I came up on the high-speed thing. A good trip, by the way. It's an 8-hour trip from Guangzhou to Beijing. I thoroughly recommend it.
Wow. I remember taking the high-speed from Beijing to Shanghai and thinking I was never getting there. But that was a few years ago, and obviously they've tuned the speed up. Well, I'm glad you're standing still in one spot, which is pretty good for an interview. But the most important thing is that we have a very important thing in one spot at the moment. The Poseidon Project's just gone to video on demand on Vimeo. And
That's right, exactly.
Yep, it's a great film. It's a great story about, you know, a lost submarine in China. And I'm watching it thinking, where does he come up with these ideas? Oh, it's true. How did the Poseidon Project, how did your film come into being?
Well, it's going back a few years now. I mean, like, you know, some documentary over a long time. So,
Arthur, stand still.
Let's say another spot to stand still in. Bye.
Right. Okay, go again.
So, it is in 2009. I was approached by Stephen Schreckert, who you've spoken to before, I think, about his work on the Poseidon Project. And he mentioned that there was the possibility of there being this British submarine off China that had sunk in 1931. And did it on a research trip to Weihai to see what could be found, what we could see, to film it. So in the early stages, I wasn't sure that it would turn into a sort of feature-length documentary, but there are some stories that you don't want to miss, so you bring a camera along anyway and start filming. And that's what happened for us. We did two or three trips like that, and then it went after a while. It was just a story, and there was sort of a lot on the bones. There was lots of stuff we could film. And most importantly, you know, history documentaries, there's sort of two types. In one type, you voice over the whole thing, and you just see the history, and you explain the objective truth about a particular moment in history. And then there's another type where you say, well, we don't know everything, but let's find out. And then you follow the journey of the way I see it is that they're a sort of detective. You know, you follow the detective, the researcher, the historian, as they try and find things out, and so you experience it through their eyes. And I enjoy the second type more. So that's what this really turned into. Us following the work of Stephen Schreckert as he went about trying to work out what had happened to the submarine, how the submariners had escaped from it, and so on. So it becomes a sort of contemporary story about history.
And that's why I like it so much. It's not one of these awful things that the BBC used to do 30 years ago where they'd just treat you like an idiot and tell you the story. This one made me feel like I was involved.
Well, that's the idea.
You really did an incredible job on this. I'm sitting there thinking, wow, tell me more. Not, you know, not like the BBC ones where I'm going, you told me this. It's really an incredible story. Was it difficult to get permission to do all this? Because, you know, people who don't live in China don't realize how hard it is to actually just do anything. So did you have any problems putting this one together?
By China, maybe they don't appreciate the complexity of it. It's not one thing or another. It's not black and white. It's not that it's difficult per se mission to do anything. It's that there are certain sensitive areas, and if you live and work here, you are aware of them. And sometimes you find that it's actually easier things to get things done here, to film things here, and people incredibly accommodating. And so you can rock up at an archive somewhere, the camera out, and you'll find that the head of the archives will come down and speak to you and be incredibly friendly and help you out and qualms at all about being on camera, in a way that in some places, I mean, my experience, or bits of Europe, they have systems to deal with the media. So you can expect someone to come and speak to you and be happy to be on camera. So it's a sort of mix. And I think if you live and work and film in China, you get used to intuiting when it is that you can get the camera out and when you can't. And in this case, most people were very accommodating in China. There were a few sensitivities around this, but and there's one particular example of that stands out. But generally speaking, people were incredibly helpful here and very, very accommodating to the idea. And I think that's partly because if we take, you know, it is about modern day, present day family descent by the survivors and those who want more about what happened to their to the submariners, wanting to understand the story and wanting to commemorate them or remember them in the case of loss. And I think Chinese people are very tuned into that sense, celebrating what they. So that wasn't explained, and people were very helpful.
Well, with a farewell song out on video on demand on Vimeo, it looks like people are very, very accommodating to you, Arthur. I mean, it must be great to be able to do these sorts of things.
It is. I mean, I think there's a sort of way, there's different ways of approaching making a documentary. But I'm looking not to rush in and do a story in a couple of weeks, much as I'd like to get them done at that speed. I'm usually looking to get sort of embedded in a story and to work with people. So if you don't have that kind of friendly collaboration with someone, then it's very hard to keep coming back and film with them half a dozen, 10 times, 15 times, whatever it is. So it's really helpful to have you don't have to be best of friends, but to be able to tolerate each other and spend time with each other, and for them to feel too that the process of working on the documentary has brought them something, a new understanding of the situation or an ability to talk something through or present something in public, then I think if you don't have that, it's very difficult to do. So of all the filmmaking genres, I was talking to somebody this morning about it as well, to be honest, you know, just around the same thing, that you sort of have to be able to get on with people to do it. You know, you can get the diva-ish feature film director who's difficult to work with, or the actor. But on a documentary, it's about the ability to find common ground, to find common purpose, and so overall it feels like a friendlier format.
Yeah, it does. I mean, both Poseidon Project and Farewell Song are big stories about people. They're not big stories about big events. They are. They must require a lot of patience, a lot of talking to people. I don't know how you do it.
They have something else in common as well, which is that we started filming both of them not really knowing where they were going to end up. In the case of A Farewell Song that we talked about before, we obviously had... It was an utter shock when one of the guys died during the making. It wasn't expected. They were all appeared to be in fine health. And of course, once that had happened, of course, it changed what it was they were trying to do, and it changed the nature of the project. And it was completely shocking at the time. In the case of the Poseidon Project, I'm not spoiling anything to say, because it's on public record now because of the film and because of the book that Stephen wrote about the project. It's on record saying that the submarine itself was not where we expected it to be. So that was also a massive twist. I mean, the original idea was that Stephen was going to go out and eventually we'd be underwater, you know, swimming down with a submarine and looking at it. That was the ultimate aim. But the nature of the project fundamentally changed when we worked out that it wasn't where it was supposed to be.
Yes, don't tell us where it is. I want people to watch the film. Speaking of watching films, you've just come back. Well, you sort of come back. You've gone from Guangzhou to Beijing, but you were in Guangzhou for the documentary film festival.
That's right. Guangzhou Doc Fest. That's right. I was down there. We were pitching a new project down there called The Sick, and we had a great response. This is the story of Chinese passengers and the survivors of the Titanic disaster. And this is a story that, again, I was incredibly lucky working with Stephen again, a story that he'd come across, where we found out that on board Titanic there were, in fact, 8 Chinese passengers whose story had never been told before, whose names are essentially not known. And they stood out for a couple of really big reasons. The first being that of the 8 Chinese passengers on board, 6 of them survived, giving them a survival rate way beyond essentially any other nationality on board. You know, for men, especially, they were all men. For men on board Titanic, survival rates were incredibly low. And men in steerage, third class, survived at a dreadfully low rate of 1 in 6, or even as low as 1 in 10, depending on where exactly they were on board. But the Chinese guys, 6 out of 10 made it out alive. Sorry, 6 out of 8 made it out alive. And so there was a story, we thought, well, how could that be? I mean, how is it that they managed to survive at such a high rate? I think the classic example is, I think there were 33 Bulgarians, I may have that wrong, but I think 33 Bulgarians on board, not one of them made it out alive.
Yeah.
6 out of 8 is extraordinary.
That's pretty high odds, yeah.
That's right. So how did they do that? You know, what's the story behind that? And that had never been told before. And the second thing about it was the way in which they'd been completely, utterly, either lost or written out of history. I mean, I grew up in a small town in England, in the Midlands of England. And in the town that I was in, across the town square was a house where a 90-year-old woman lived, and she had been on board Titanic. And so she locally, at least, was very well known. People, you know, that's the Titanic lady, that's the Titanic lady's house. We'd know that. And that's true of all the survivors of Titanic. And to be honest, most of those who perished as well, they're very well known, at least locally, and often nationally, and their stories are available to check online and in books and so on. But the story of the Chinese guys utterly disappeared. And the twist in the story, the moment when it happens, is that when the 6 of them are picked up and rescued, they were taken to New York along with all the other 700 or so survivors in a ship called Carpathia. And they landed in New York, and whereas the rest of the 700 or so survivors were welcomed with open arms, and many of them proclaimed as heroes and at least extraordinary survivors, our 6 Chinese guys were arrested, held under house arrest for 24 hours, and then shipped off on a fruit boat to, possibly, the story goes, Cuba, at which point they utterly disappeared from history. No one's ever claimed them. There's never been a newspaper article about them. There's never been any coverage about who or where they were, who they were, where they went, what happened to them, where their descendants are. No descendants have ever claimed them. And so it was impossible to not tell the story at that point. I was initially skeptical, you know, another Titanic documentary. Am I really going to spend time on this? But when I realized these 2 big facts in the story, I thought, well, that has to be told. I mean, especially since I've spent so much time in China. And as I told people about the story, you know, within China, people were shocked that they didn't know this story. They'd never heard of these people, especially when the Titanic story is so resonant in China, for whatever reason, to not know there were Chinese people on board. But also, as I told it to other people, including TV people, and that's my experience at Guangzhou over the last week, American international broadcasters say, well, it may be about Chinese people, but it's also about immigration. It's about families. It's about survival. It's got universal themes that make it appealing to everyone. You know, how could they have completely disappeared? It just makes no sense.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. I mean, I mentioned that you were doing this to my wife, and she's Chinese, and she said, what do you mean there were Chinese people in the Titanic? There's no Chinese people in the film. Sweetheart, the film's not a documentary. It's not?
Well, it's strange you mention the film, because, you know, it, of course, it's my memory of the film, seeing it many years ago, is it's a story of rich and poor on board Titanic, but essentially all white people.
Yes.
But there are other stories. There were other nationalities on board. There were non-white people on board, and their story has never been fully told. And there is a story about racial profiling, about the way people were praised, lauded, or looked down upon after, based on nationality. And we felt like the Chinese story was part of that. And James, just to be fair to James Cameron's film, he actually shot a scene featuring one of the most sort of explosive elements of the Chinese story on board Titanic. They shot that scene. I've seen it. It exists, but it didn't make the final cut of the film.
Oh, well, that's something at least. But, you know, you've been pitching this documentary. Is it hard to pitch this to backers here in China? Do they just say to you, I don't want to hear any more stories about Chinese people. I want to hear something different. Or what sort of reaction does it get?
No, to be honest, the Titanic story, I mean, that is a reaction we do get sometimes. But because of the Titanic link, I think it's a story that everyone says, well, one of the things about documentaries is we want a new story. People will always, you know, everyone's looking for a new story. But a new story about something that was sitting there underneath your nose all these years is in a way the most exciting thing to do, because it's taking something we thought we knew, the story of Titanic, and then finding a new way into that story that reveals something completely surprising, whereas we didn't even know a story existed. And that gives it an immediate appeal to audiences. It's about Titanic, but it's something completely new.
I know, I'm hooked on the idea already. I'm thinking I should go away and look this up, and then I'm thinking, No, I'll just wait for Arthur to do all the hard work.
Well, you know, go ahead and look it up. What you'll find is that there's very little information about them available. And so, you know, just as a little teaser into the story, you know, a little teaser about some of the things we found, it was, as I said, their descendants were utterly, had disappeared. Nobody knew if they had children. It seems unlikely that none of them had children. But there were no descendants claiming them. We have found some of those descendants. So we've worked out where they went, and we've found some of those who have the family who continue to live in the places that they ended up, some of the places the survivors ended up, and there's reasons why their story was never made public before, and that's part of the intrigue of the story.
Well, I won't ask you about that, otherwise people won't watch the film either. Arthur, it sounds like you have a wildly exciting life. I'm sure this is not completely true, but you go everywhere, you film many things. I mean, you know, is it hard being a documentary filmmaker?
I mean, people say, I mean, first of all, I don't have a wildly exciting life. I squeeze in documentaries between other work that I do, and the issue with documentaries is always the it's a classic issue of filmmaking, which is that it's always hard to find backers. It's always hard to find people who'll back a film. And so, particularly with documentaries, you can spend many years working on a project not knowing if in the end you'll be able to get out there and show people. It's why you have to both have several stories on the go, to always have your sort of documentary antenna up and be ready to hear a story and look at something new, but also very quickly hone in on the best ones and be able to find audiences for them. We do a lot of work online now, trying to build audiences for the work that we do. And Vimeo and the video on demand platform is great for that, because we can get people to go to vimeo.com/on-demand and then search for our film titles, and they can get them right there and watch them wherever they are. So it's a great way of sort of avoiding the issue. I mean, everyone would like to work with a big broadcaster and have their film played all over the world. But, of course, that's not true of every project. But just because a broadcaster doesn't pick up a story doesn't mean it's not worthy and wouldn't have an audience somewhere. And the ability to play films online and access audiences is fantastic and very new and very fresh, and it's really exciting for us to be able to do that.
Well, I was thinking about that. I was thinking the other day that this idea that you don't have to put... Well, it used to be you'd make a documentary, you'd have to get it in the theatres, and that was hard work, or you'd have to get it on a network, and now it's, no, I just have to get it on the internet.
Well, that's it. I mean, obviously, when you're on the internet, the issue is then can you signal to the people who might be interested that it exists there? Mm. And so there's more work involved in that. In the old days, it would have been someone else doing that work, a distributor or, say, a broadcaster. So we have to do more work with that. But to be honest, with the kind of documentary filmmaking we do, putting out feelers into the world and saying we're working on this story is a good thing. I mean, it keeps us on our toes. It keeps people asking questions about the projects we're doing. And sometimes it leads to new connections and new leads on the story, where somebody will say, well, it's funny you should say that, because I know someone who knows someone who told me this or that or whatever.
also it cuts your distribution costs, your marketing costs, your overheads, and the big whack that everybody else wants to take out of it. It's not that you're going to make buckets of money out of making a documentary, but more people will get the opportunity to see it because it costs less to actually screen it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And there are some of the old problems. You know, you don't, who wants to sit necessarily and watch a film on a small screen on their lap kind of thing. But there are, you know, there are ways around that now. There's Apple TVs and different boxes. You can download a film and then put it back on your TV screen and all the rest of it. So it's getting easier and easier. And I imagine in a few years' time it's going to be literally the click of a button, or the, you know, you'll press an inserted microchip under your thumb or something, and you'll be able to watch any film you want.
Oh, I don't want to get that close. No, I want to be able to sit across the room from the television, not have it played across my retina. Although I'm sure that for documentary filmmakers, that's exactly the way they want it. No, there is
anything
no escape.
For the audience. Anything for the audience. I mean, it is true. I sometimes think of my, documentary filmmaking. One of the things I always think is, you know, feature films are great. I love feature films. I love fiction films.
Mm.
But I'd, underlying documentaries is the idea that it's about something that's real. And so if I'm going to sit there and watch something that isn't, you know, I'd rather watch, I'll put it this way, I'd rather watch a bad documentary than watch a bad feature film.
Oh, any day of the week.
Underlying it is the idea that it is actually true. You know,
yeah.
It's, fundamentally it's about something that's real and really happened. So that, you know, there's always that to come back to. Documentaries are attempting to tell you something about the world you actually live in.
Hopefully you can learn something. This is
Hopefully.
This is why I keep saying to my students, you should be watching this. You'll learn something. You're not learning anything from the Avengers. What do you mean you learned something from... What did you learn from the Avengers? That computers will be our overlords. Oh, thank you very much. I knew that already. Arthur, so you've got the six on the go. You've got Poseidon Project and Farewell Song on Vimeo. Is there anything else in the pipeline? Is there something you're currently thinking about you can tease us with?
Those are the films we have out. We obviously have other films that are on the back burner and ready to go. But I'm gonna have to disappoint you, Joe. I'm gonna have to keep them secret for the moment, keep them under my hat, because we need to turn them into proper stories with where we know how they're gonna develop. But those are the big ones, and to be honest, a lot of our energy now is going into the six. It's there's such a lot of work to do on it, and we're excited, following Guangzhou especially, that we have broadcasters now who are on the verge of backing it. I'll let you know as soon as that happens, but you know that we've got people on the verge of backing this, that all of our energy has to go into researching it. You know, what's on the screen of course is in the end 80-90 minutes in the feature cut of the film, but behind that, you know, there's months of work, of which only a small part is done by me. You know, there's lots of other people involved in pushing this and working out what happened and finding the documents and going to archives and making calls and speaking to professors of history here, there and everywhere, I can't get too distracted. I have a full-time job as well as this, so.
And my life must be bloody hard.
No complaints, no complaints.
Arthur, apart from seeing the films on video. Video? They're on video, but they're on Vimeo. Vimeo. Is there somewhere that people can go and have a look at what you've got on the go and find out more about you and your projects?
Well, the newest place to go, we do a lot of our work on Facebook now, as I say, trying to build an audience around films. And each of the new films we do gets a Facebook page, and we like to build a community of people who are there, either supporting us, just clicking like, or, once the films are out, posting a review, or helping us out with research and help, you know, we find people all over the world in cities that we haven't had a chance to go to yet who can help us out finding things. And for the six, we're already online, and we have a thriving community. In the space of a week, we've got hundreds of people, helping us out with the film now. And you can find the six at facebook.com/the6documentary.
And for those of us who are in China and can't actually see the forbidden social media sites, is there anywhere else we can look?
You can get yourself a VPN like the rest of us.
Shh! I don't want them coming knocking on the door again.
Well, I think Vimeo comes in and out of blocks, doesn't it? So,
yes.
It's often available. And so on Vimeo, if you go to vimeo.com/on-demand, and then you search for either A Farewell Song or The Poseidon Project, you will see under the name of the movie, there's the name of our production company, which is LP Doc, which is part of LP Films, and Merriman Films, which is our UK distributor. And if you click on that, you'll see all the work that we're doing there. We post a lot of little short films. We do little recuts of some of the films and put them there. And you can download, you can rent and buy all the films that we put out through that as well.
Excellent. All right, Arthur, look, it's been lovely catching up with you again. We've been catching up with you steadily over the last couple of years, and it's always good to talk to you.
Yeah, you do a brilliant job, Stuart, as well, by the way, so I'm a huge fan of the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much. I go away with a nice warm glow all day. But lovely to talk to you, Arthur, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Stuart.